We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
1, 2, 3,
listen. All right, we're here with Coach Jesse Miller of BTB Lax. Jesse, we had some great quarterfinal matchups that we're going to talk about today, men's NCAA Division I. Thanks for being on the podcast again.
Yeah, it's great to be here, Matt. How you doing?
Doing good, thanks. Hey, so first matchup we'll talk about, Maryland versus Cornell. So, Bubba Fairman, for those unfamiliar with Utah lacrosse, was a Utah product. He had 3 goals and 2 assists on the day and what was a career day for the Terp freshman. What did you see, Jesse? How was Bubba able to be so successful?
Well, he certainly had a great day, and they were talking about him all the time in the broadcast there. Initially, when the game started, he was getting some feeds to Bernhardt, finding him for some good looks. And then, especially in the second half, he was just finding those seams in the passing lanes up top where he was able to catch some of those skip passes and just finish those shots. So I think, and then even in the second half, too, he had that. He was actually doing everything. He was assisting in the first half. He was finding seams for time and room shots. And then he also had that one goal where he took his defender one-on-one to the cage. I think by that time, his confidence was just sky high, and he just, pretty much felt like he could, do what he wanted at that point. It was pretty fun to watch, to be quite honest.
What were some of your initial thoughts about, the game as a whole?
I was thinking about this a little bit because I figured you'd probably ask something along those lines. I think Cornell really overachieved this year. If you think back to last year, Coach Kirk was their head coach, who I actually know really well, and they struggled a little bit. Jeff Teat was a freshman. They have good players for sure, but this year they had a great year. I mean, they won a lot of big games, and those close games that they were in this year, they were coming out on top as opposed to losing them last year. And I remember even talking to Kirk before the season last year, and he was like, "We have a pretty good team this year. Like, I feel pretty good about this bunch." And it's just all about momentum and stuff like that. So, I mean, Cornell, going into the game, had 4 losses, and those were basically to Yale, Princeton, Colgate, and Albany. And the Princeton game was the last game of the season. It didn't really affect their seeding very much. Colgate was early, and then Yale and Albany, also obviously very good teams. I think, they had that tight game. They showed a lot of grit throughout the season. They had that tight game even last week against Syracuse. And then the teams, they struggled a lot when Teat was getting shut off and they were essentially playing 5-on-5 offense. And that's what their coaches decided to do based on they felt they liked their chances going 5-on-5 and kind of just leaving Teat to kind of be off to the side there. And if you watch these games closely, you can see the announcers, some of them not necessarily agreeing with that. So it definitely had a big, big impact on their offense as a whole because they had a very efficient offense. They were, a high-shooting team. But then going into this Maryland game, that coupled with they didn't shoot the ball very well either. They shot the ball extremely poorly comparatively to what they were doing the rest of the season. So I think, then you get one step closer to the Final Four, which Maryland is so accustomed to being, especially the last, I think they've been there now 7 out of the last 8 years. It's a hard battle for them to overcome, that Maryland team. So I just think in a way, Cornell was overmatched, especially with the way that they were uncomfortable the whole time that they saw that shut off to Teat. And then there was the guns for Connor Kelly didn't have to do too much, but Bernhardt got off to a fast start. And then, as you talked about earlier to to open up this interview. We Bubba had a huge day as well, so it's just hard to overcome that. So that's kind of my overall thoughts of the game.
Yeah. So you mentioned how Maryland was kind of using, you know, different players to shut off Jeff Teat. You know, we saw that in the Syracuse game when Syracuse played Cornell in the playoffs. Why does that seem to cause so much trouble for Cornell?
It actually first started. It started. Princeton did it the last game of the season. Princeton at the time thought they had. We actually talked about that game, I believe.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago. Princeton at the time had an outside chance to make it, so they did that, threw a big wrinkle into Cornell's mojo. Then Brown did a similar thing in the playoffs. Then Yale opted not to do that when I'm talking about playoffs, I'm talking about the Ivy League championships before the NCAAs. Yale opted not to do that in the championship. And then, you know, when you're scouting these teams and you see it, so Syracuse going in the game opted to do that, and so did Maryland. It's kind of like you have like a well-oiled machine offensively, and then, you know, a team throws a zone at you, and it just kind of throws a hiccup into the mix. I think 100% when the Cornell coaches go back and dissect, you know, the last 2 to 3 weeks of the season, they're going to, obviously it's a Monday morning quarterback, they're going to wish that they did certain things. The one thing that I did notice is that it just seemed that, you know, T was off to the side as opposed to, even if he's being shut off, like finding more ways to be proactive, to be involved, whether it's like setting picks or something along those lines, as opposed to just pulling him off or relying on the other guys to create offense for you. I think it messed with Pete's internal confidence, and then it also messed with the team as a whole. Because, I mean, he had almost 100 points this year, and I think in the Maryland game he had 2 assists, and those came late. So it's just one of those things that other guys need to step up right away to get them out of it, or they need to do more to get Teat involved where it's not, you know, that type of situation where it's just going to, you know, essentially just halt the train from moving forward.
Yeah, so looking towards next season for Cornell, you know, how are they gonna, you know, it's I'm assuming teams are gonna probably throw that look at them a lot. How do you think Cornell's gonna be able to solve that issue next season?
Well, first off, Coach Millman is an intern coach. I would assume he's gonna get the job based on the success that he had this year. But they gotta shore that up first, because, I mean, you have to keep in mind that he was recruiting all year as with that label, and they've used that label a few times in the past few years, which I'm not sure how it affects recruiting or not, but I assume that it can't help it, right? If you're a kid, you want to go somewhere where there's, you know, there's going to be stability, that sort of thing. But I would assume that the first thing they need to do as a program is get the head coach in place. And then they focus on the recruiting, getting other guys in. He's got 2 more years, so obviously the guys they're recruiting now won't be playing with Teat. But hope that they have guys coming in. The one guy that is graduating is Doliak, right? And he's a stud. He got drafted. He had 4 goals in this game. He was just 4. They came, you know, 3 of them, I think, came in the 4th, kind of when they were down by 8. But still, he could play. And they got other guys, too. So they're just going to have to do a – they're just going to have to spread out the offense more. It's kind of similar to what Yale does. Like, Yale has those contributing factors that really help out Ben Reeves, and Cornell's going to have to figure out the same way to do that, right? So, and then once they do that, then the defense needs to focus on more than one thing, whereas we kind of saw that if you could shut down Cornell's one thing, it really derailed their offense. With that being said, they beat Syracuse last round. I mean, it's not like they lost the first round. So, you know, them, if you were to tell the Cornell program that they were gonna, hey, well, how about this? We'll give you Ivy League come in second place during the regular season, win the Ivy League title, win the first round, make it to the quarters, lose to Maryland. Yeah, I mean, especially coming off a losing season the year before, that's pretty good momentum going into Teach junior year, you know?
Yeah.
So, all in all, I think that's the way the program's looking, and everybody's pretty excited that it's back, you know, and on the map. You know, people who are just tuning into lacrosse, you know, the average observer who doesn't love lacrosse but just tuning in, you know, in May would see Cornell playing as one of the one remaining 18s. I mean, so that's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a great point. Hey, so speaking of Tourton finalists, you mentioned Ben Reeves. Connor Kelly.
Can I just say one more thing? Can I say one more thing about Maryland?
Oh, yeah.
So, Maryland, what Maryland's doing is, it's unbelievable. I mean, Tillman is a great coach. I mean, he's been there 8 years. The team has gone to Final Four weekends 7 times. That is insane. But the other thing that I was like I really was thinking about it is they basically have a Twarton guy in every class other than the junior class. The junior class is a little, you know, there's no like huge names in that class. But I mean, they had the Twarton winner last year. This year, it could be Connor Kelly. It might be Ben Reeves, which you were talking about. It probably will be, but we'll see what happens. But it could be Connor Kelly. As a sophomore, Bernhard is nasty. I think he's going to explode the next 2 years. Not to mention he comes from such, you know, athletic family. His two older brothers play in the MLL. His father coaches the NFL. I mean, his older brother coaches, one of those older brothers who I mentioned that plays in the MLL, is also his coach at Maryland. So, I mean, and then as a freshman, they have Bubba.
Hey, so Ben Reeves and Pat Spencer are both competing for the Twarton. You know, they were going head-to-head with Yale taking on Loyola. And this was a pretty exciting game, you know, going back and forth. What did you think about this game?
Yeah, I mean, it got off to an exciting start for sure. Yale kind of always had the upper edge. At the end of the first quarter, it was 5-3. Basically, Loyola tied it up 3-3 with limited time left in the first quarter. And then Reeves fed Dana Jealous, and then Reeves fed Jack Ty. And before you know it, it was 5-3. Then to start the second quarter, Yale scored again. Basically, Reeves dodged, assisted Gaudette, another one of their attackmen. And then the other thing that we should definitely talk about is, so 6-3 after that goal I just mentioned. And then the other thing I want to talk about for sure is the Yale 10-man ride, which they've been using all season, which is a pretty awesome thing. You'll hear them talking about it a lot on Saturday. But Ben Spencer scored to get it back to 6-4. And then basically I think another part of the game that really hurt, so 6-4 at halftime, another thing that hurt Loyola a lot was their man up in the playoffs for sure. In the Virginia game, they were 0-7. And then whenever you're 0-7, even though you can have those talented players, it definitely hurts the psyche of the unit. I just know by experience, and I've coached, you know, man-ups in the past, and, you know, with, especially now, even just with the high school kids at Gonzaga, it's such an interesting dynamic, man. Like, you can either be grooved or you can't be grooved, and sometimes it's just, I feel like the unit has, you know, feels so much pressure that they just don't perform at all, and they essentially crumble, which kind of looked like Loyola did, especially in the third quarter. There they were man up with 12:30 left, and 12:30 left in the third. If they score there, they go 6-5, right? And it's a ball game. But instead, they turn the ball over. It did not, was not a good man up. Dana Jealous scores again. And then before you know it, going into the fourth quarter, it's been 30 minutes and Loyola hasn't scored. They had another man up too with less than a minute left in the third quarter, and it was another kind of a disaster and just didn't look good. And then I think that, you know, it really started to rain in the second half, and the game just got a little wet, and I don't think that helped Loyola's mojo either. And Yale played very sound. They had their 10-man rat, which I'm going to talk about, but they also did a really good job, like in the fourth quarter, of possessing the ball when they had the ball, like using up the clock, and, you know, were able to hang on. One thing before I touch on the 10-man rat, one thing though for Loyola that was unbelievable was their goalie. Stover was off, like played unbelievable. He had 19 saves, which is the most saves that he's ever had. I mean, this thing could have like really gotten away from Loyola. He didn't play so well. But the other thing too, so now just to touch on the 10-man ride, is, you know, they've been doing it all year, and I actually emailed Coach Starcher about this because he's a buddy of mine and he loves lacrosse and he watches all these games, and he goes, hey, you know, when you have a team with 10-man ride, there comes a point where you need to have athletes who are just going to make a move and run it out of the offensive end. And he goes, I thought all year round that Yale has a bunch of good athletes. Like, they have like 6 to 8 guys who are really good athletes that can, you know, just cause havoc. So like when you throw those guys if you don't have those to match them, then it's very difficult for a team to consistently break that 10-man ride. Like, they did it a couple times in the first half. Like, Spencer would run, and Spencer's an athlete for sure. He would run over to basically the defensive end and help clear the ball. And then, but as, like, you know, that scoring drought of 30 minutes went on into the second half, into the fourth quarter, you could kind of see that Loyola was deflated. And even one I remember specifically where it kind of looked like Loyola kind of gave up and just threw the ball out of bounds. And at that point, you know, you saw the Yale sideline going nuts because they knew they had it. They knew they were going to the Final Four weekend. And even actually, Loyola didn't, to their credit, they didn't go away. They got it within 4 minutes left. But that type of stuff always seems to happen, you know, with, like, you know, because Loyola's still a very good team, right? But then Yale's able to score one more time and make it 8-5. So just like a wet game, and then those are like the big keys that I saw.
Yeah. So you mentioned Stover, you know, coming up big for Loyola. He's really kind of the one that helped keep the Greyhounds in it. Talk about his performance.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. Did you see the game?
Yeah, I did.
He had so many saves. I mean, even in the first half. Like, in the first half, I mean, Yale came out firing. They came out hot. So he had 8 saves midway through the second quarter. And then he tacked on, you know, he doubled that, more than doubled that, in the rest of the game. I mean, don't you think that game could have been, Yale easily could have scored 4 to 5 more goals, right?
Oh, yeah.
It would have been somewhat of a blowout. So the kid played great, and it's just too bad, because I'm sure, you know, coaches always do this in their nature, but I'm sure if you were to say, hey, Stover's going to have 19 saves, well, I'd probably feel pretty good. You know, they've had a good year. They were in the second round. Like, I'll take that. I think we've got a good chance to win, but their offense just, you know, was slow this particular game. So just lacrosse.
Yeah. Hey, and then also you mentioned how Ben Reeves was kind of able to dodge for Max and dish it up to the midfield. Why was that such a favorable matchup for Yale?
Well, what happens is when he's dodging, he's so fast that he draws so much attention to himself that you can literally see 5 of the 6 heads, maybe 6 of the 6 heads, like, fluffing in and looking at him. It just happens. Like, you watch these plays and slow motion. I mean, I could even make a YouTube video on it for my BTV Lex YouTube channel. But you just see it, and the announcers talk about it. So he draws so much attention that even when you slough down those, you know, that extra yard and a half, that opens up those lanes. And then the thing about the middies for Yale is that they capitalize, right? And I've seen them capitalize in multiple games this year. I saw them capitalize in Albany. I saw them capitalize in Loyola. The one game that I didn't see them capitalize in was Cornell in the Ivy League Championship, which was odd. The middies did not, like, those, like, the supporting cast did not play well in the Cornell Ivy League Championship. But you have to keep in mind, 2 days before that, or maybe even the day before that, they absolutely shellacked Penn. So they maybe were taking things a little for granted. Who knows, right? But just the way it was, but definitely probably woke those guys up. And not that they were ever really asleep, but just you need to be on all the time, especially when you're playing against these type of competition. So the reason why it opens up is he creates a step, gets definitely a slide, but everybody else is looking. They're sloughing a little bit more compared to anybody else, right? And then you've got such good vision. And not to mention the passes are like right where the players need, or the shooters need to have them in order to get their shot off. It's not like they have to like reach down or reach up and, you know, catch up a bounce or anything like that. He's like putting these passes with like very, very good accuracy.
Yeah. Hey, and Yale, you know, headed to championship weekend for the first time since 1990. How do you like their chances coming up this weekend?
I think they're great. I mean, we're going to see the Albany game round two, right? And the thing that's different this time around is, in the first Albany game is when Fields went down with his knee problem. He had the knee problem before, but he came back for this game, and he went down there in the first half, and that kind of scuttled Albany's offense. I think the face-off battle is going to be huge between those two guys. Mackey, you know, won that battle in round one, but I'm sure, you know, it's not going to be any walk in the park, you know, because Albany's got a pretty good guy too. And then, you know, so that game's going to be a battle. And then if they win it, they're going to have to either play Maryland or Duke. They're very familiar with Maryland. They play Maryland every year, and they play them tight all the time. Like, you know, for the last multiple years, that game is always tight, and they've won it, you know. So they're familiar with Maryland, probably not so much with Duke. First time Duke's been there in a while, actually. I mean, you just have the one thing about Yale is they have the freshman goalie who actually went to St. Albans and from Washington, D.C., and we play them every year. So that'll be interesting to see how the freshman goalie responds to this big, big stage, right? So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think Yale, they've been doing great. It'll be a good matchup for sure.
I think if I were to have to pick one team to win it all, I'd probably pick Maryland.
Yeah, I would agree with you there.
Because their goalie is a senior. The one thing I didn't mention in the game that I was talking about is they did a good job at the face-off X in that Cornell game. Basically, Justin Shockey was taking a lot of those draws, and he's a freshman for them. He played Atlanta last year. We played him, too, and he was a beast in high school. And he originally went to the Knapp School for Navy because he was going to go to Navy. He was there in the fall, didn't like it, left, enrolled at Maryland, and they wanted him to play right away. So, like, as soon as he got there in the spring semester, he started playing. They, you know, they didn't redshirt or anything, and then he's had up and down a little bit, you know, throughout the year. But in this Cornell game, he looked pretty good. They won 15 out of 24 faceoffs, and he took the majority of them. So, you know, you have freshmen at some pretty key spots for each team, really, and well, maybe not so much Duke, but definitely for Yale, Maryland, and Albany. You have some pretty key freshmen, so we'll see how those guys do. But if I had to pick somebody, I'd probably pick Maryland.
Yeah, they seem like because a very complete team.
I think Connor Kelly is going to play pretty big. He's been there every year. It's like,
yeah,
you know. And then I think their goalie is at some, you know, they'll shore up. Everybody's talking about how their mini defense kind of been their Achilles heel throughout the year. I think one of those guys are athletes, and then I think Bernard will play pretty well. And then But who knows? I can't wait to see it. We'll watch both games. I'll watch both games, obviously, this weekend, so we can talk about, I guess we can talk about all three of them sometime next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Hey, Jesse, thanks for being on the podcast. I always appreciate your insight.
Yeah, the one other thing I want to mention real quick was in the Maryland game, you know, when Bubba was going off, they talked about Utah lacrosse a lot for that little segment there. They were talking about how Park City had a great year, Quint was, and then they talked about how there's 42 Utah high school lacrosse teams now and how it's really growing out there, how they've attracted some, you know, some big-time coaches from the East Coast to go out there, and they've been out there for a while now, and they're establishing, you know, a strong, strong thing. And then they talked about how Utah, you know, is going to have their program, their Division I program, starting next year. So it's just pretty exciting stuff, and you're going to be right there in the thick of it all. So definitely be excited to talk to you next year as well after all this stuff.
Yeah, definitely an exciting time, and glad to have you a part of it.
Cool, man.
All right, well, thanks, Jesse.